Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks very much, Jeremy. Good afternoon. On this Monday afternoon, how are you? How'd you get through the weekend? We lost an hour. Yeah. Everyone's going around slightly jet lagged. That's because you do, you actually lose an hour. Everyone's feeling a little bit groggy, a little bit tired. I feel happy because after 6 months, the clock in my car is telling the correct time. Yay! I know it's an easy thing to change the time, but it's just there. And then I thought, I know that it's an hour out, so I'll just stay with it. And now it's back on time. So that'll be confusing because I'll think it's an hour out and it isn't an hour out. Anyway, seemingly a lot of people do that sort of thing. They don't change it when the time goes back or forward and just let it run. So their clocks and their microwaves and in their cars and wherever are right for 6 months of the year. And for the other 6 months, they're not. That's funny. We were talking about trees with Enini Launa on Friday. And we were playing around with the idea of maybe asking you to nominate Ireland's favourite tree. Mary Corcoran took us at our word. And she dropped us an email over the weekend to ray@rte.ie and a photograph. I'm looking at the tree here. It's an amazing looking tree. And I'll read you Mary's email now. Hi, Ray. I love trees. And when I heard you talk on your show about Ireland's favourite tree, I knew I had to share my number one with you. As in our number one tree, you see. This is a view of my tree on Saturday morning at 8 o'clock. The photo is taken from a small balcony outside my bedroom. I look at this tree and it lifts my soul. It has an elegant and ladylike stance. It looks so strongly rooted and confident of its space in the world. Mostly, I love the way it holds up its arms and branches with joy to greet the new day. I'm sure that I'm not the only one in Ireland that will vote for this tree as number one, but that makes it even more special to me. I'll read that again. I'm sure I am the only one in Ireland that will vote this tree as number one, but that makes it even more special to me. I love the show and especially your chats and with the quiz contestants. Ordinary people, ordinary trees, aren't they really the most extraordinary of all? Best wishes, Mary. Yeah, I'm with you on loads of things there. I'm looking at the tree and your description is poetic and apt and fitting, and I can see everything you say there. So there's a solidness about that tree and yet a majesty about it. And the fact that it means so much to you is special. So maybe after our casual chat with Anna and now the email from Mary, maybe this is something that we will do. Maybe we will organise it, because you have to organise it. You can't just say it. It doesn't work like that. You have to have meetings and get the corporation involved and branding and social media and all that sort of thing. That's what you have to do if you want to organise some sort of a competition. But even the word competition isn't apt. It doesn't suit. It's something more than that. It's for us to look around and notice the trees in our vicinity and let the man on the radio know that those trees are special to us and the reason they're special to us. So, yeah, watch this space and look out for your favourite tree, because we could be asking you in the very near future to nominate it as Ireland's favourite tree. You have to be careful on online and shopping. And I've regaled you with horror stories of mine over the years. The runners coming from China, I thought I was getting a bargain. They were half the price of the ones that you'd buy in the high street, and I should have known. It took months for them to arrive. I'd even given up on them, and then they weren't what I thought they were. Chris Arnold has tweeted, my dad has accidentally bought 60 pairs of reading glasses. Sorry, I shouldn't laugh. Off the internet. After misreading the quantity of his order. Of course he did. He was ordering glasses. Couldn't see it properly. And there's a great picture there of Chris Arnold's dad with one pair on and then 12 boxes of 5 glasses beside him on the sofa. I've bought glasses online as well, just by way of an experiment. And they claimed to be one thing, and guess what? They weren't that thing. I still have them. They're sort of spares. But they said they were a brand, a well-known brand, and they're not at all. They're sort of nearly like toy glasses, something you get in a Lucky Dip. Remember those? Anyway, I don't know what's going to happen to Chris's dad, but I'm intrigued to know. Does he send them back? What happens? Does he just keep them as spares? 60 pairs of reading glasses. That is brilliant. Mary was talking about trees, and there's an interesting article in The Guardian today. There's an art historian trying to figure out Van Gogh's or Van Gogh's fascination with the cypress tree, because they feature in a lot of his paintings. And this man has traced it back to the Eiffel Tower, because he reckons that Van Gogh was in Paris at the time they were building the Eiffel Tower. And there's lovely pictures there then of the Eiffel Tower being built, and how Van Gogh represented the cypress tree in his paintings. And there is a similarity. Now, whether, you know, somebody with a notion, but it could be true, and it's worth having a look and having a chat about that. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Men with smaller feet are better lovers. There you go. If you're a size 6 or a size 7, how did they figure this out? Well, a poll of 4,500 women were quizzed about the best and worst lovers they've ever had, in a bid to find the perfect man, the perfect lover. Among the celebs with big feet include Hollywood star Jared Butler, who wears a size 13. Arnold Schwarzenegger is a size 12. Those with smaller feet includes Tom Cruise. He's a size 8. And Home Alone star Joe Pesci. He's a size 6. The study found that 53% of the women polled said that lovers with smaller feet up to a size 8 were the best in bed. A total of 20% said that Mr. Average size 9s were the best. Yeah, it begs the question, what size shoe? 8.5. 8.5. Although I found, and I don't know if anybody else has found this, that increasingly either I'm shrinking or shoes are getting bigger, because the last couple of pairs I bought, I had to go for a 7.5. So I've been wearing 8.5s and 9s all my life. So maybe it's the opposite of shrinkflation in the shoe department. Let me know about that. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Now, we've done this the last few weeks. I think it's a good idea. We've asked the crew, the team, to tell us what they watched over the weekend. Then I recommend it to you. Because you have to watch telly during the week as well. Like, a lot of these lists come out on a Friday. So we're giving you the list of things that you might want to watch during the week. The brilliant thing about it is that they're not all current. They're on various different platforms, and because some people just go back and they watch something that they've been recommended and might be a few years old. Anyway, we have a bit of music behind it. We do, yes. Yeah, so Emily P started watching the new season of Love is Blind, and she said, just when you think reality dating shows have had their day, you get sucked into another new series with another new concept. And Emily despises Love Island. She said this might be a good alternative based on a social experiment where single men and women look for love and get engaged all before meeting in person. Yes, they literally date from behind a wall. She says, I love the idea of people falling in love because of their personality rather than their looks. Solid 3 stars from our Emily. Love is Blind on Netflix. Gilly watched The Three Identical Strangers on Netflix. This is a couple of years old. Brilliant documentary. It begins as a wonderful discovery that became a global sensation, with triplets Bobby, David and Eddie appearing on TV chat shows. They had lived separate lives and then they found each other. The adoption agency that set the triplets out for adoption, there was a darker side to it, because they were experimenting unbeknownst to the people involved. All of this becomes obvious in the documentary, and it's very sad how it all turned out, but well worth a watch. It's fascinating, and it's a real case of truth is stranger than fiction. 4.5 stars from our Gilly. Niamh watched Paula on All Four, which is 2 documentaries about the life and times of Paula Yates. And again, that's sad as well. We all know the outcome of that, but some great footage from around the time of The Tube, was it? Was it The Tube or The Word? The Tube. And The Big Breakfast, and her interviewing Michael Hutchins on the bed in The Big Breakfast. And, of course, we know how that turned out as well. So that's Niamh's recommendation. Neil, new to Netflix, The Night Agent. It's 1 on Netflix's chart from Ireland. 3 stars so far. a show about a man who works in the White House basement answering an emergency phone that rarely rings. We watched a bit of that at home and we gave it 20 minutes and moved on. But anyway, The Night Agent, 3 stars from our Neil. Emily H. watched Waco, American Apocalypse, which is a documentary on Netflix, which covers the Waco siege back in 1993, 51-day standoff between the US federal government and a heavily armed religious group. And they interview people that have never been interviewed before. 4 stars from our Emily. And Grace, yes, this is what we need. Gudetama. Never heard of it. Gudetama. It's on Netflix. An excellent adventure. If you've never heard of it, it's an absolutely bizarre show. Kind of for kids. It starts off quirky and cute, but soon turns into a surreal fever dream, says Grace. Gudetama is an egg, right? A lazy, miserable egg who reluctantly embarks on an adventure of a lifetime with a newly hatched chick who's determined to find their mother. Eggs are off the menu in Grace's house now after watching this and developing an emotional attachment to Gudetama the egg. And just to give you an idea of how surreal the show is, Gudetama has a rasher as a blanket. A half dozen stars from Grace. Gudetama, an excellent adventure. Something for all the family there. And thank you to the team for that. We'll do it again next Monday. Now, 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. It's not 6 months, Ray. I thought that for years, but it's 5 months just completed and 7 months. Best wishes. So it's not a split down the middle when it comes to the change of the clocks. Breed in Ferrybank says, I didn't change an outdoor clock on wall in back garden, so had one less to spring forward yesterday morning. Saved me a minute's time. That's great. And we have main streets in Ireland, not high streets. So Sean, you're right, Sean. Sorry about that. And thanks for pointing that out. I've always been a size 10 or 11, but the last 3 pairs of work boots have been 8s and 9. I don't understand it. See, Joe, we're onto something here. I'm the complete opposite, Ray. When my daughter was one, I had my gait analysis done and discovered that I had gone up not one, but 2 sizes in my trainers. I was baiting my feet into a 6, but now we're an 8. Hasn't improved my running, though, says Orla. Succession season 4. Well, they didn't watch that because it starts tonight. And of course, everybody in the team, I think, is excited about that. Logan Roy, the man with the highest expletive count on television anywhere, returns tonight. Succession. There you go. Just. I meant to nod to that. Ray, if you've ever been to the south of France and the countryside around Arles, where Van Gogh lived, there are cypress spruce trees everywhere in gardens and fields. So I think that's why he painted so many, and sunflowers too, says Anne. Yeah, but art historians have to do that. They have to have theories about things, don't they? Correct pronunciation is Vincent van Hoek, like Hoek with a soft K. That's Patrick in Cork. Thanks, Patrick. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Oh, yeah. You want to know what I was watching? Yeah, we're still watching Daisy Jones and the Six. It's on Prime. It's loosely based on Fleetwood Mac, based on a book as well. And we're really enjoying it. Pure escapism. And this is the theme tune. Good afternoon. Patti Smith. Dancing Barefoot theme tune from Daisy Jones and the Six. Thank you very much. The most beautiful tree in Ireland is in the grounds of Maynooth University, South Campus. I'm looking at a picture of it and it is quite spectacular. And the picture I'm seeing, looking at here, was taken just as summer turns to autumn. Those lovely gold and rust and red colours. And it's splendiferous. Still on Maynooth, would like to wish Mark Nugent good luck as he starts his hand cycle from Sutton to Galway as part of the Galway Cycle by the Maynooth College. This year, money being raised for... As Dara did. Good luck from Mary and Bernard Kelly, the family in Tempelogue. Good luck to you, Mark. My friend in Germany ordered a free-range turkey online from a farmer in Odenwald. She wanted a 22-pound turkey, which is a big enough turkey, but she ordered a 22-kilo turkey. I don't think such a thing exists. Her husband had to use a chainsaw to cut it in half and remove legs to get it into the oven, says Colette. Is that a real story? Was it an ostrich? I'd say it was an ostrich. This wonderful sycamore tree used to stand at the top of my grandmother's garden in Sandyford, and my mother remembered climbing it. Then I climbed it for many years as a child and teenager. We lost the patch of land in the noughties, but a wee patch of land with the tree survived. So then me and my son John climbed it and set up a hut in the hideout. Then one day when the new cycle land has been built, I noticed a sprayed line heading up to the tree, and after asking found out it was marked for chopping down the next day. I made a call to the local councillor, and after a meeting the next morning, the planners agreed to go around the tree. Yay! Saved! The best tree in Ireland, says Simon, and a great story. See, that's the sort of thing. That's the sort of thing we want. The Night Agent series is excellent. It is propulsive, slicker than slick, fun, with every hairpin turn perfectly negotiated. That's Anna in Cork, quoting The Guardian, who gave it a review. Maybe we'll go back to it, because usually I like that sort of thing. I have it on good authority, i.e. Stephen Fry and the QI Elves, that historical language experts have been insisting that Vincent van Gogh's name should not be pronounced as neither Van Gogh or Van Gogh, but actually Van Hock. Yeah, we have that. The mind boggles. That's Declan Byrne. Yeah, we all know what we're talking about. It's about communication, isn't it? So if I name a painter Van Gogh, Van Gogh, Van Hock, whatever, you know who I'm talking about. Starry, Starry Night and all that sort of thing. OK, we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. Yep, two quizzers, three Who Done It questions on music, sport, TV, books, politics, film, comedians, anything that involves human endeavour. And like all Who Done It, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get two. And if you answer with a clue, it's easier, so you get 1 point for a correct answer, and there is a prize. And this week it's a 2-night break for two people in Foda Island Resort, nestled at the heart of a peaceful island surrounded by gorgeous scenery and just 8 miles from Cork City. Pack your bags and escape to your own private island this summer with Foda Island Resort. Enjoy complete privacy and 5-star luxury in one of the exclusive 2, 3 or 4 bedroom self-catering lodges, perfect for families, groups of friends or fellow golfers. Today we are giving whoever wins the quiz the chance to win a 2-night stay for two adults in a standard room with breakfast each morning and dinner on one evening in the Amber Lounge. Photoisland.ie. Photoisland.ie. Okay, on this Monday afternoon, here is your qualifying question. That's a great prize. That's a really good prize. Loads to do down there. They have the wildlife park. You're close to Cork. You're close to Ballycotton. All those places. Okay, this Irish band announced their UK and Irish tour this morning. Are they Picture This or Picture That? So an Irish band announced their UK and Irish tours this morning. Was it Picture This or Picture That? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Dil Vic Ramasinghe and Anne-Marie Toole have been together for 13 years and married for 8 of those 13 years. Last year, they decided to embark on a new journey in their relationship by becoming polyamorous. And now they're in a throuple. Yay! After meeting their girlfriend in December. Dil and Anne-Marie join me now. And we should say at this point that we'll be discussing issues around relationships and intimacy that might not be suitable for younger listeners. Anne-Marie, how are you?
I'm really good, Ray.
Dil, how are you?
I'm brilliant. If you're going to be in a trouble with you for the next 30 minutes.
Whoa. Is that the way it works? Just like that, just like that. So for people who don't know you, Anne-Marie, so just tell us about your relationship with Dil and how you met and all of that sort of thing.
Dil and I met 13 years ago. I had just come out at the age of 29. And literally 5 minutes later, I met Dil. We connected straight away. We had a really good, just a very good, interesting, exciting journey through just getting to know each other, then parenthood. We set up a business together. We set up our psychotherapy practice together. It's been amazing. Yeah. And it's been exciting. It's been an adventure.
Yeah. So we spoke in 2018 and you were pregnant with Xavier.
That's right. Yeah.
What age is Xavier now?
5 and a half.
I should have been able to do the maths. Yeah.
He's crawling around in your control room as you speak.
And Phoenix is out there as well.
Phoenix is out there too.
So you have two boys. What age is Phoenix?
Phoenix is just turning 8. He's 7 now, turning 8 in May.
Right. So you came out at 29, which is old enough, isn't it?
Which is late, right? Indeed, yeah. And it's relevant to our discussion today. It is. My own sense of what happened for me there, it was probably the organic process to come out at 14. It didn't happen through for various reasons. But at that stage of my life, it felt safe enough to actually go into, to connect and feel into my sexuality at that point.
Yeah.
And I came out. I was fortunate enough to be able to do it at that point, which was really very an enriching experience for me at that stage in my life, and a very, 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 very necessary one.
Because it lifted this load off your shoulders,
yeah.
I would imagine.
Incredibly, incredibly, yeah.
Because we know, I'm reading all this all the time, if you're living a lie, the bigger the gap between your true self, for want of a better phrase, and this face you're putting on for the world, the bigger that is, the more likely you are to suffer from some sort of mental illness.
Absolutely, which was indeed my case.
I was
struggling with mental health concerns as a result of not being able to connect with that true part of my identity. Mm. And in terms of the inauthenticity of not being able to express this part of who you are, it really does weigh us down inside. And it impacts our joy and our pleasure and our excitement of living life afresh.
Yeah.
And we can feel that very, very quickly when that's starting to happen for us. So it's really important we act on it and speak to it, yeah, if it's something that we're experiencing.
It wasn't actually 5 minutes, though, was it?
It was about a month later.
A month later. That you met Dale.
Which was incredible.
Yeah. She literally came out and met the gold standard of lesbians. Right here. So why look anywhere else? then.
So, ladies and gentlemen, Dale, the gold standard in lesbians. What's your memory of meeting Anne-Marie for the first time?
Oh, my goodness. So it was a big story. We met at a mental health retreat. And actually, it was the day that Gerry Ryan died. And I remember driving up to Wicklow, listening to the news, quite upset about the news. And when he got there, I was told that because it was oversubscribed, I had to share a room with another participant. And I was like, this is a mental health retreat. The last thing I want to do is share a room with another basket case like myself. But I thought to myself, look, I'm here. I've got here. Let me at least meet the person I'm supposed to share a room with. And next, you know, someone tapped me on the shoulders, turned around, saw these incredibly stunning blue eyes. Mm. And that was it. And I just said, can I make you a cup of tea? And it was instantaneous.
Right. And then you were in a relationship, then you got married after 2015.
That's right.
Yeah.
Incredible moment.
Yeah, and the lead up to all that must have been amazing, yeah, particularly for you, Anne-Marie, because you'd been, you know, I suppose in the closet for so long.
Well, and unknowingly, Ray.
All right.
One thing being in the closet with awareness, there's another being in the closet without it.
All right.
Which was when I came out at 29, I came out to myself at 29. It was as big a surprise to me as it was to anybody else. But yes, the 2015 lead up and experience was palpable for that time period in the country. And then the exuberance and the joy and the exhilaration of what occurred there. It was fabulous. And it was very, very enlivening and awakening for a lot of people.
So you got married and then you had the chats and you decided to have a family. Mm-hmm. And we've established that already. You have two lovely boys.
I was pregnant with Phoenix in the run-up to the referendum.
Yes, right.
So that was a very exciting time for us because we were in the middle of the...
were pregnant.
Yeah.
So both of you carried a child.
That's right.
Which isn't always possible for couples.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was important.
We were like a Celtic Tiger home. We have two ovens. So you may as well use them both, you know? Yeah. And full equality.
Well, now you have three.
My gosh. No, we're done. No. Thank you. The shop is closed, lads.
Okay. Right, so let's get to polyamory then. So who'll define polyamory for me?
So polyamory, Ray, is the having multiple romantic relationships and doing so with full consent with everybody. So everyone has to consent to your ability to have these multiple relationships. And I suppose in many ways, it's like the opposite of cheating, the opposite of being unfaithful, you know, in inverted commas, because that's what usually can sometimes happen in a relationship where without consent, someone will go off and play offside and whatnot. And that brings utter devastation and heartbreak, not just to the partner, but also to the children. And I come from a family where that was the case. Out of a 23-year marriage, 12 years of that, my father was unfortunately doing that. And I remember as a child feeling incredibly betrayed. And the house felt so unsafe and so fragile. Like the ground of my feet, under my feet was not solid, you know. So this is very much the opposite. It's a much measured, it's calm, it's controlled, and everyone's needs and happiness are considered.
Okay. So who broached the polyamory thing?
So that would have been me. Okay. So that would have
people
been...
think it's me, but it wasn't me. It's the quiet ones.
I suppose if I was asked, I would have said Dill.
Everybody in the country thinks it was me. It wasn't me.
Okay, well, there's a few bits to it. Okay. We've mentioned one in terms of my later coming out in life. But in terms of last September...
Okay,
when...
now let's just... Because that's important.
Yeah.
Now that you said it. Because you went straight from coming out as a lesbian to going into a relationship
that's
and then
right.
get married. So you had no experience of anything else.
Exactly.
Now, that happens for a lot of people.
That does happen for a lot of people. Yeah. And I remember consciously at the time... Because
when I say it happens for a lot of people, I mean in heterosexual, homosexual, people marry their childhood sweethearts, and that's
exactly
and
right.
Happy, yeah.
So I suppose just to preface that a little bit, the description Dill has given there in terms of polyamorous relationships, we have what I would say certain innate ways that are really, really natural to us in terms of how we relate, how we connect in relationship. I always knew that was me. I always knew I needed more expansive, more diverse ways of connecting. So polyamory in and of itself was never a new concept for me. It was something that I always knew fitted very naturally with who I was. So I remember very consciously when I met Dill at 29 and knowing this was a phenomenal, incredible woman. And I knew that our relationship would develop into a long-term commitment. I remember at that point kind of registering with myself, this probably means that all of what you want in terms of other connections and other relationships probably won't happen.
Yeah.
And I remember that being a conscious choice going, do you know what? This is definitely not a relationship with Dill that I want to walk away from. So that other part of me.
So you signed up for monogamy?
At that point.
Yes. Okay.
At that point, most certainly, because it felt in a very new experience of a relationship and then in a very fresh coming out process, that was most certainly enough at the time. So then our relationship developed, but I effectively brought this to Dill more tangibly last September, but it wasn't a new thing for Dill. We had talked about it throughout the 13 years. And when I brought it to Dill in September, I knew that our relationship as it was then was rock solid. I knew it was the right time for her, and I knew it was definitely the right time for the family and for the family system to be able to integrate the change that this would likely bring about.
And so prior to that, whenever you approached the subject, I was literally, it's like I would put my hands on my ears and go, la, 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 I don't want to hear this, because it was just so scary for me.
Except this in September. So in September, there had been chats about it.
There had been chats about it throughout
chats.
The years. No, not so vague. No.
So what was different about the chat in September then?
I suppose I knew, Ray, in truth and in connection with Dill, I knew that this was the point that she was ready for it. Dill had just completed a really significant 5-year training period in psychotherapy. This involved mammoth self-exploration, real connection with her core self. My antenna, my intuition about this throughout the entire relationship was, I think this is something that could work really, really well for both of us.
Right.
But that only works when both parties are ready. This was never about bringing chaos and destruction into the relationship. This was about expanding into more joy, more love, more connection.
So it wasn't that there was somebody there. There was nobody there.
No.
So it wasn't that you were sort of retrospectively trying to include somebody else in the relationship.
No,
that wasn't
that,
it.
That could have gotten really tricky if that was the case.
Yes,
no.
So you had the chat. Dill, you put your hands over your ears initially.
Not in September, beforehand.
No, beforehand.
Beforehand, yeah, beforehand. Because I was aware of that. The fact that Anne-Marie had literally been out 5 minutes before she met me. And it just came up over and over over the 13 years. And I remember...
Was she curious about your experience then before ye got together?
Yeah. I came up when I was 16, so I had more experience. I got a chance to sow my wild oats and all that stuff, But I was always conscious that Anne-Marie didn't, and that it kind of pained me that our timing was amazing. We were meant to meet when we were meant to meet, but unfortunately, it kind of robbed Amory the experience of, you know, having more experiences. So we, this conversation had come up, but each time it was very frightening for me, because, you know, it's all about your attachment style. You know, my attachment to Amory is incredibly strong, also because I don't have a family of origin, and there's I was expecting my Amory to be not just my partner, my business partner, my best friend, my family. There was a lot of pressure that I put on Amory, and the idea of possibly losing her was just inconceivable for me, absolutely inconceivable. But exactly as Amory said, in September, after the fact that I did the 5-year training course and then a 4-year training course, and then last year in particular was the worst year of my life because I lost my mother because she was 88, and then 40 days after that my sister died by suicide. So the grief that I experienced was unprecedented, and it was like an earthquake had hit my life, you know, and our own family, you know. So I lost this incredibly deep connections to two people that I never got enough of, and when Amory said this to me, I remember thinking, maybe this is a way for me to actually create and invite more love and connection in my life, because I have loads of friends, but there's a difference between having an intimate a sexual relationship and a friendship. And I thought maybe this could work for both of us, give Amory those experiences that she's been craving for, and give me an opportunity to have more love and connection in my life.
Yeah. That's the theory of it, isn't it?
I would add to that, Ray, all of what Jill has described there within the commitment of our existing relationship.
Because that's
really important.
You were interviewed in The Independent over the weekend. And I'll just quote yourself back to yourself, Jill, because you go, Amory and I have been together for a long time and we're very happy together. We love each other and everything in our relationship works. I suppose people at home are going, well, yeah, there you go.
What more do you want?
Yeah, exactly. they would be saying that.
Sure. I think there's a few bits to that. One, I think neither Dill or myself would be described as wanting to be defined by any kind of limitation.
Right.
I think, again, speaking to, we have to go inside with this stuff, Ray. We have to connect with who we are to understand what we want and need in life. In this case, in our relationships, I knew I needed something like this. So in that instance, if I'm not speaking to it and expressing those needs and looking for them to be met, why not? Am I getting caught then in the stigma? Am I getting caught in the I shouldn't? Which to me is not a good enough reason not to go and speak to those needs and really try to live as full and a joyful life as possible.
And we're also
I'm wondering, do we all have unmet needs? That's part of being human. And most people, I suppose, don't act on those unmet needs and they get on with it. I suppose that's isn't it, for most people? You would see that in your work.
Yeah,
wouldn't you?
Big time. But that at the core of your mental health is that.
Yes.
So maybe if people were more open to meet their needs with consent, especially if you're in a relationship. If you're single, of course, you can do anything you want. Yeah. But if you are in a relationship and you have children, why not try and meet those needs?
Okay.
Because ultimately, it's going to improve the quality of your life and the quality of your relationship.
So you consented.
We did.
So the next step, what was the next step then?
The next step, we connected with some of the dating apps.
Before that, we did the research.
Emotional
research.
Work.
Come on.
I cannot forget that part.
No. I'm a journalist as well, and research is so important. So we work with clients who are polyamorous, but for ourselves, we had to kind of refresh our memory on all the material there. And we podcasts, books, we connected with the polyamory community in Ireland, support groups, did the emotional work, and we were in personal therapy, and we engaged a psychosexual therapist. So there was a team of people. I'm not joking. There was a team of people. And this whole thing, anyone listening to this and thinking about doing this, please, you know, do this in a controlled, measured way. Don't go after one chat, oh yeah, let's do this, and then go on an app and then expect things to go
well.
No,
it wasn't a decision you took lightly at all. And you've been talking about it for years.
No, the emotional work was hard, Ray.
Yeah.
From a couple perspective, from a relationship perspective, we went into, and I'm so deeply proud of the work that Dylan and I did before this started. We went into every unhealthy pattern that had developed.
Should relationships be work, though? I know they are work, but that amount of work. Was there any time since September that you thought, no, this isn't...
So the, it's funny because the word work actually see our girlfriend or partner would actually have an issue with the word work because we use that as a psychotherapist. Anything to do with emotional work. You know, I often think like an artist who's work doing their work of art and they're sweating over it, but they're getting so much enjoyment. Well, that's what we are doing on ourselves at the end of our life.
Work, yes,
if we can look at ourselves and I'm a work of art at the end of our life. Yes. Great.
So eventually you went on an app. Is there a polyamory app?
Well, not a specific. You can state your preferences on any of the various dating apps. We got good advice on which ones to choose, which were the safer ones. And we learned a lot. App culture is a really effective way of meeting people these days, provided one is informed, one has support, and one understands how to use it safely and is feeling strong in themselves in that.
So did you go on as a couple? Is that the way
we did? We did initially, right. Yeah. Okay. That's what we did. Right. And that worked really well because we were very clear and transparent about which is important.
Yeah.
And you will see an awful lot of that in app culture as well. That's really important. And then from there, then we had some really positive connections. And from that, then about a month later, we met C.
Yeah, we never actually met anyone in person. We had a couple of, you know, WhatsApp chats and we had one video call. And C was kind of known to us and known to me because she works in the NGO sector. So I saw her on the app and I didn't want to like her because in the sense that I knew her and Amory didn't. And I thought maybe we should only engage with people that neither of us know.
Right.
But didn't see go and like both of us, you know? So she kind of made the first move. And I was like, oh, okay, well, Amory, what do you think? Will we chat and see? So we chatted for a couple of weeks. And then we met, had our very first date. The attraction and the connection was instant. And
for both of you?
Yeah.
For both of us.
Right.
Yeah.
So both of you had to like her in a sexual way and she had to like both of you in a sexual way.
Sexual,
emotional, romantic,
spiritual,
yeah, but
all
yeah,
of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, attracted
all of
to
it.
You.
Absolutely.
In the whole
the
package.
The broad range, exactly.
Yes, yeah. What are the chances of that happening?
I know,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's pretty amazing that happened in the way that it did.
Right. So you're now in a throuple. With C.
Mm-hmm. Can I tell you a funny story about our first date?
Will you hold it? Because I have to take a commercial break. Sure. So we'll talk about the first date with C and what it's like to be in a throuple with Anne-Marie and Dill after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now we're talking to Dill Vikramasinghe and Anne-Marie Toole, founders of Insight Matters, about being in a throuple with C. So we've got to the first date and you want to tell a story about the first date.
So walking up to the date, I was saying to Amory, how are we going to know whether we like her? You know, maybe you might want to make a quick exit, you know, exactly, because it's having two people to be attracted to another person is hard. So we kind of came up with this signal that Amory would take off her bangle if she wanted to leave. If she wanted to leave and she was uncomfortable, she would take off her bangle and hold the bangle in her hand. So then the date started. And at one point, Amory was so animated that her bangle actually flew off her wrist. So I was like, oh my God, the bangle has flown off. What does that mean? So then I went and I reached, got the bangle, gave it to her. And then she was holding the bangle while she was talking for ages. And I was sweating bullets here because I was thinking maybe she wants to leave and I don't
That's
know.
Funny.
Yeah, so there you go, the bangle. Yeah. But Amory was the closer at that.
But you went away from that date then had a chat afterwards.
Yeah.
How did that chat go?
Do you know what, Ray? It was actually seamless. The connection was just really easy. Another big piece of all of this, when we talk about polyamorous relationships, we have to lean into the boundary setting, the commitment, the need for really informed discussion. And infusing all of that for both of us was fun. It had to be fun. It had to be. It had to have pleasure attached to it. In it, that just all happened so easily with C from that first date. So it was the chats were, hey, and how was that for you? But we kind of already knew.
Yeah, and had C been in a polyamorous relationship before?
No.
Right. Okay. Yeah. You're right. I'm intrigued by you broaching it, Anne-Marie.
Okay.
Right, and if Dill said, "I'm not interested."
You see, these things we talk about.
Were you in a position of power?
Okay, so how would I answer that?
Nice question, right?
Nice question.
Oh,
it's a good question.
Carefully,
okay,
counselor.
So we have to look at the nuance of the 13-year relationship. It wasn't the first time I'd brought this to Dil. There was a sense in me, knowing Dil so well, that this was the right time for Dil. I would say that from the moment I broached this with Dil, that time, we co-created everything from then on.
Okay.
That's the most accurate way to describe this
process.
Now,
people are curious, aren't they? People are, there's sort of a salacious curiosity about troubles. And we've seen that recently in the papers. How does it work? Is there a ledger sort system? You know, time spent.
Might you be talking about sex, Ray?
Yeah.
I'm talking about sex and just like time spent with a person,
sure.
Attention given to a person, whatever it may be, whether it's sexual or romantic or just sheer minutes, you know, hours and minutes. Are you clocking it up? Are you keeping an eye on it? Is that the way it works? I'm intrigued.
Well, first of all, we're three mums, so we don't have time. We don't have oceans of time, so we just have to be really good at multitasking. You know, we have to be really good at ensuring that the time we do.
I suppose that was a sort of a man's mathematical way of saying: is there jealousy? How do you talk about that before it happens? Is it inevitable that it will happen, or not?
I would say all of the above.
Right.
You do talk about it we talked about it amongst each other to say, hey, if this occurs, when it occurs, how do we deal with that? And we all agreed that as soon as the person felt safe enough to express their feelings, that we all just sit and talk and connect on it. Jealousy is a really natural part of this process, but both of us have experienced it. But in terms of, to speak from my own experience, when it did happen, it was about understanding the why of it. Why is it there? And creating as much space for it as a legitimate emotion as any other that was arising from the experience, and understanding it as in the context of unmet need. Something is happening for somebody if they're feeling a jealousy in this context. In my own experience, when I experienced it, I knew I had a deep sense of happiness for Dil and C in their connection and the deepening of their relationship. Mm. When I started having those feelings, it brought to my awareness, what's happening for you, Anne-Marie? Something is going on there that you're not fully connecting within yourself. You need to spend a little bit of time with that. You need support from Dil and C in order to do that and really understand. And once I did that, I was able to say, okay, yeah, that's what this is. In other words, it's not... Jealousy gets a bad rap. It's nearly like something we shouldn't be feeling. So if we are, I need to chase it away quietly and in solitude. Maybe I need to be feeling a bit of shame about it. Not at all. It's a really natural, healthy, organic emotion in relationship. And we need safe connection and attuned support to be able to
articulate
deal with it.
Articulate it. Just say it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And this word.
And empathy.
This
sorry,
word,
Ray. Empathy is deeply important in this entire process of what we're doing.
A new word to me is... compersion.
Beautiful. Yes, I love
beautiful it. Compersion. Yeah. I hadn't heard it until I read that article, and then I was watching a YouTube video today, and there it was again, compersion. So it's obviously a word that the polyamory community use,
and it's very much to describe the happiness and joy that you experience when you see your partner feeling happy and fulfilled by another romantic partner, which is the opposite of jealousy. And just like Anne-Marie, there were moments at the start where I felt jealousy as well, connected to my own insecurities. But overall, I found this feel... I didn't even know what compersion would feel like, but I would feel this enormous gush of love for and gratitude, gush of love to Anne-Marie and gush of gratitude to C when I saw the two of them connect. And see, and I would see Anne-Marie come alive and sparkle when she was in C's company. And I was like, oh, I'm so happy that Anne-Marie is experiencing this. And I got to see Anne-Marie through fresh eyes. And I'm learning new parts of her.
I'm aware that your two sons are outside. Mm. So
yeah.
I don't want to talk about the details of the sex part of it.
Okay.
Yeah, because, or are you comfortable? How did you communicate this to them?
Okay, so bringing it into the family is another consideration naturally in this. And again, it's really important that you attune where the family system is at, where the kids are at. independently in their own emotional resilience, independent of all of this. Again, that informed my timing of bringing this to Dil, because I knew the kids were ready at the ages that they're at. And then the kids, we organised it such that you never bomb drop a kid with anything like this. It's too much. You need to give them context, you need to give them safety, and you need to give them a tuned connection. And the first way to do that is we arranged that we meet C and her kids before we actually explained the relationship to the children. So we met, we went for a movie in town, we enjoyed, we went for dinner, and we met a few times. So the kids bonded really, really naturally with C, which we weren't surprised by, but we were overjoyed about.
And her kids, they loved it. The kids just got on like a house on fire.
Really enjoyed,
similar
right?
ages.
So all of that is already there. So it's not an unsafe thing. So then when the time was right, again, we have our family chats around the kitchen table. And I basically explained it. I said, hey guys, we brought it back to what the absolute core of this is all about for Dil and I. And it's really, really simple, which is good with kids. Love. And I basically said, hey guys, you know the way mommy and mama love each other? Yeah. Well, mommy and mama love C. And then they were kind of like, okay. And then I explained a little bit further that the love we have for C is different to the love we have for our friends. And then our Phoenix immediately was kind of said, hey, or it's weird. And I think he had some funny chats with you about it afterwards.
He said, are you going to marry her? And I immediately said, no, actually, we can't marry her. And I kind of immediately got on a soapbox. That's really not fair. And, you know, Amory was like, come off the soapbox. We can, that's a fight for another day. But his response was like, that's weird. And then over time, we've been checking in, you know, how is it for you now? How's it for you? And he went from weird to weird good to now even more recently to good.
Okay.
So it's been a journey. Where Xavier, on the other hand, was just more enthralled with the fact of that we kiss C on the lips, you know? That's
a sign that it's different to a friend.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So initially, it was all three of you together when it came to kissing on the lips. And now you've branched off.
Yeah.
How do you arrange that? Is it a rota system or?
On the fridge, and it's on the fridge as well, so, really important in the foundational months is that there's connection for all three together. Mm. That you're building a foundation here, a relational foundation of trust, commitment, and honest communication of needs. So we spend a lot of time together in the early months. And then naturally, Ray, as relationships are, they need to be organic in order to be fun, right? At a certain stage in that, it becomes unnatural that the three need to stay together for the enjoyment to continue. That just becomes like, while it's a natural part of the beginning, it became unnecessary. Mm. And then it became very simple. Hey, do you two want to go off on a date? Beautiful. I'll stay with the children. Do you two want to go and have a walk in the park? Lovely. We'll do that. It just became really, really natural, as relationships are.
And you're dating as well outside of the trouble.
I'm dating outside of the trouble as well.
Where do you get the time?
Which is, you know, that's true.
I don't know, Ray. I really don't.
Busy schedule, but it's again, it's within the context of the commitment and the context of the family structure and what the family can hold in the greater. I never lose sight of that 360 in therapy term container that's holding all of us.
So you're in the honeymoon period with C, and you know, because you're bright people and you're psychotherapists, that there is this phase of any relationship. Where there's sort of, call it lust. I think there's a
new energy.
There's a psychological term, limerence, you know.
New relationship energy.
Which eventually plateaus as opposed to fades. What happens then?
So, and it's an interesting question. My sense of the relationship with C, yes, I understand what you're saying about the timeline, but the foundational connective pieces there are.
After that this early on.
Oh, absolutely, right. Yeah. No, I trust my antenna, Ray. Look how well it worked the first time.
Yeah, that's right. Go stand on
Can you predict what Annie Tex is saying here? Because you've heard it all before. What do you think they're going to be saying? Any idea?
We are attention seeking. Why are we sharing such private information?
Well,
what
you
about
can
the
answer,
kids?
You can answer that. You can answer. Why are you sharing such private information?
Because for the work that we do in Inside Matters, we've been working with polyamory clients for years, and the one thing that always comes up over and over and over again, especially if the clients have children, is the fact that they feel that they can't share it. Because this is like a sexual identity.
Yeah.
You know, and everywhere you look, it's all about being monogamous, you know?
So, and the other one is, what about the children? And what about the children? Is there any research about the children of polyamorous couples, troubles.
I'm sure there is, but for we decided to practice sex positive parenting, which is about being honest about sex and not shaming it. You know, okay. We use the correct terms.
But age appropriate, parts.
Of course, yes, age appropriate. Yes, yeah. But being
so
matter
say,
of fact,
you say penis and vagina.
Yeah,
and all that.
And yeah, matter of fact, and what happens during sex and all that. So, but it's about not making it shameful.
Right. Sorry, but this seems to me just like having your cake and eating it. That's I knew that one was going to come in. Can you please ask the couple if there is a concern about insecurity developing when two of the three getting on better? We've addressed that. And my wife asked me to explore being in similar polyamory relationship. After researching it, decided against it. Everything I read on the topic was direct me towards one party being submissive or coming out poorly. My wife cheated on me after. I would caution anyone from my little knowledge on the topic. I would be looking more as to why you are feeling this way, says that person. We've run out of time.
Consent.
Yeah. Thanks so much for being so honest coming in. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dale. Thanks, Anne-Marie. I hope you're happy.
And thanks, see.
Send our love to see.
Yeah.
Right, quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Thank you very much, Colm Gormogod. Somebody was on to say, Bernadette was on to say, Succession actually lands first at 2 o'clock in the morning. Sky Atlantic recorded last night, says Bernadette for you Succession fans. You can do that from here on in. Serious record, isn't it? The button, the red button thing. Okay, we've two quizzers standing by. And a prize. And this week it's a 2-night stay for two people at Foda Island Resort, nestled at the heart of a peaceful island. Loads of things to do down there. There's golf and there's the wildlife park. And if you're looking for some place to go during the summer, you can enjoy complete privacy and 5-star luxury in one of the exclusive 2, 3 or 4 bedroom self-catering lodges. Perfect for families, groups of friends or fellow golfers. You can find out more. FodaIsland.ie. FodaIsland.ie. Sheena Kenahan. Hello, Sheena.
Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Is it Kenahan or Keenahan?
No, it's Keenahan.
Keenahan, right. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Sheena Keenahan.
And
you're in County Clare. What are you up to, Sheena Keenahan?
I'm in O'Brien's Bridge, County Clare. That's where I live. At the moment, I'm out in Killaloe doing a bit of shopping.
Right. Okay. And you have three boys?
Three boys, yeah. Callum, Brian and Oren.
And what ages are they?
Callum is 14, Brian is 16. They both go to St. Anne's Community College in Killaloe Secondary.
Right.
And my oldest son is Oren, and he goes to Tooth in Limerick. He's studying business.
So you're obviously in buying food, which you probably have to do every day. Yes.
I can't keep food in the fridge, Ray.
No. Well, somebody had a 22 kilo turkey there. That's the type of thing you'd be looking for in your house. Do they all eat the same thing? I remember when we were growing up, my poor mother, and there was 9 of us. There were a couple of fussy eaters in the family, and she had to make separate meals, like for various members of the family.
No, they're great eaters, in fairness. They love curries, they love casseroles, anything really.
Oh,
they're great.
Great.
So no complaints there.
And you were off in Killarney for the weekend?
Yeah, I went down for a night on Saturday night, but we had to come away because we just stayed the one night. My mother's in hospital at the moment.
All right.
We need to come off.
How is she?
She's doing okay. She's getting tests done now and she's in the right place at the moment. So she's feeling a lot better.
Great. I hope she gets well soon. You're a big fan of nature. You go for a forest trail walk when you can of a Sunday morning. Yes.
Yes, there's a lovely forest trail out in Killaloe called Ballycuggeran.
Yeah.
So I go there most Sunday mornings and it's really nice.
Because they're talking about the benefits of forest bathing. And when I heard that first, I thought you had to go out and bring a bath with you out into the middle of a forest. But it's actually just going out walking and soaking up the sounds and the smells and everything that the forest has to offer. It's nice.
Right, okay. Yeah, that sounds...
Well, you do it. You do it anyway. You do it. That's what you do every Sunday morning.
Yeah.
You're up against John Noble. John Noble, Sheena. John is in Bray in County Wicklow. How are you doing, John?
Hey, right. You well?
Good, yeah. So your house has changed quite substantially over the last while.
Oh, big time, Ray. Yeah, the arrival of our 3-month-old baby Fionn in December.
Right. So go on. How has it been?
It's been amazing. Wouldn't change it for the world now. He's a good little guy, getting bigger by the day.
Yeah.
eating every hour or two, keeping us busy. So both of us are at home at the moment. I'm taking some time off. She's off on her maternity, so just enjoying life at home with himself now.
Isn't it brilliant? Like, it's brilliant that both of you can be off.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's lovely.
Because I remember the look on Jenny's face when I was like, I think I might have taken 2 weeks off or something when Kate was born, and I remember the look on Jenny's face when I was, you know, going out to work that first day, and
Come
it was
back.
Just, yeah, it was just, yeah. No, don't leave me, don't leave me.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's it. Yeah, yeah. So unfortunately, I've been able to stay around, but obviously, I'll have to go back.
Eventually,
but,
yes, yeah.
Yeah,
but it's great for both. It's great for both your relationship. It's great for your relationship with Fiona as well, isn't it? Because you're there
totally.
Bonding. Yeah,
yeah, because yeah, you'll never get that time back again.
No. It's great to be able to do it.
It's our first baby and all that, so it makes it extra special.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
What do you? We do this thing on a Monday. We ask people what they were watching. What were you watching over the weekend? Anything just to recommend?
Well, we actually watched a movie there on Saturday night. We watched Sing Street.
Oh, yes, that's a great one, isn't it?
Yeah, we actually saw it before a couple of years ago, but we were just looking for an Irish movie to watch, and we just thought, yes, we'll watch that. And it's a brilliant movie, really well made.
Well, if you like that, because the star of that, I can never remember his name, it's Double Barrel, Pilo's in there. What's his name?
The main Ferdia, guy?
Pilo Walter, I think is his name. But he's in Coda. Have you seen Coda?
Coda?
Yeah. Yeah, CODA, okay. as in a child of deaf adults, and it won an Oscar last year, I think, for best. Well, it won a lot of Oscars for various things, but so it won Best Picture last year. So if you like him in that, he's brilliant in it, and it's a singing one as well. So you like that Coda,
okay.
CODA?
Yeah,
there you go.
I'll check it out for sure.
Thanks for that. You're welcome. Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. Sheena versus John. Three questions each. I'll give you the category, then I'll ask if you want a clue. If you go with a clue, it's easier. You get 1 point for a correct answer. Without a clue, you get 2 for a correct answer. Whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. And if it's a draw on points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Thank you.
Right, Sheena. Sheena plays John. Sheena, music is the first category. What do you want to do? Do you want to go for a clue or not?
No.
No. Okay, no clue. So for 2, who is this? Tell me what it is that's going to make things so complicated. I see the way you're acting like somebody else gets me frustrated. Life's like this, you fall and you crawl and you break and you take what you get. Who's that?
No, sorry.
No. And none of the lads are with you, no?
No,
sir. No, they probably know. Avril Lavigne. Okay. Early days. Don't panic yet, Sheena. John, music. Do you want a clue or not?
No clue, please.
No clue. Okay. For 2, who is this? Who's that?
I think that's Celine Dion.
Right? It is Celine Dion. Yes, 2 points for that. Would you have got that, Sheena?
I would have.
You would have, yeah. Just, that's the way they fall, isn't it? That's the way they fall. Okay, second question, the category reality TV stars, Sheena. Reality TV stars. In fact, it's Irish reality TV stars. So,
okay.
What do you want to do? Do you want a clue or not?
No.
Okay. So which Irish reality TV star is this for 2 points?
Sugar, when you have that kind of success from the show and then you kind of go back in, will people go, oh, I don't like him anymore? And I remember I was a bit like, and then I got good money and I was like, okay, we're going to do it. But also I knew it was an opportunity for people to kind of see me again in that sense. And I haven't really changed really in the 9 years at all. I was still the same person.
Who is he though?
Brian.
Go on. No.
Brian.
Sorry about that. No. Brian Dowling. Brian Dowling. He had half, and I can't give you a point, unfortunately. That's not the way it works. Okay. Now, the way it works here, Sheena, if John gets anything from this, he wins today.
Okay.
So, John, you hear that? If you anything from this, you're today's winner because Sheena can't catch you.
Sure.
So, what do you want to do? Do you want to go with a clue? Or?
I'll go no clue, please, Ray.
Right. Well, okay. Fine. It's your choice. So, which Irish reality TV star is this for 2 points?
You know what? Before going in, I thought that I'd be hated because I'm very opinionated. You know, like, I speak my mind, yeah. And a lot of people don't like that. So, going in there, that's what I had in my head.
Yeah.
I was thinking, you know what, I'm going to come out, I'm going to be hated. Like, I'm going to be in there for a week and I'm going to come out and I'm just going to get abused.
Yeah.
But I still didn't care about that. Yeah. Like, if I did care, I wouldn't have went into that show.
Who's that for 2 points? No. No.
Not sure, right?
Yeah, Longford's finest. Maura Higgins. Maura Higgins. Now, Sheena, you're still in it.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. Would you have known that one, Sheena?
I would have.
Yeah, that's the way they fall, isn't it? That's the way they fall.
Love an island.
Okay, yeah. so if you get this right with no clue, you're on two, John's on two as well, and if he doesn't get the final one correct, then it's a tiebreak question. So the category is TV hosts. TV hosts. You sort of have to go without a clue, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, okay. So for 2 points to keep you in the quiz, who is this TV host?
Well, it was a 1907 white steam car. So the fuel line was clogged. So I was underneath it trying to clog. And I said, blow some air through the line. That's really clear. And then suddenly, I got a face full of gas. And then the pilot light jumped and my face caught on fire. And I said to my friend, Dave, I'm on fire. And Dave, okay. I said, no, Dave, I'm on fire.
Who's that? No.
No.
That's Jay Leno. Jay Leno. And this is factually correct, Sheena. They didn't suit you today because you would have got John's ones right. We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy show. Keep cup. Great talking to you. Good luck with the shopping.
All right.
Thanks, Sheena.
Thanks, Sheena. Bye.
John, you're off to Ford Island. Yourself and Carly and Fionn probably as well. And you can go to fordisland.ie to see what's in store for you. Enjoy that. Great talking to you, John.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks very much.
Are you going to be watching the game tonight?
Yeah, I'll have a look.
Yeah.
should be interesting anyway.
Yeah, nervy times. Good luck, John. See you.
For
bye,
sure.
bye.
Okay,
bye,
right. Bye. Take care.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Conor Pope is here and ready to go. PriceWatch@rte.ie. We'll speak to him after this. Now, we spoke to Leo from Saw Doctors on Friday, so that put N17 in our heads. And there it is, Tola McKay and the RTE Concert Orchestra and her version of N17. We're joined by Galway man, Conor Pope.
Yeah, big fan of the Soul Doctors.
But you weren't always.
No, I wasn't. When I was young and stupid and thought I was cool when I was in college, I thought, oh no, the Soul Doctors are a terrible band. And I was in a band myself. And actually, the truth turned out to be that I was in a terrible band and the Soul Doctors are a great band. And I have so much time for them. Like, I love, like so many of their... I have this thing, I have a Spotify playlist of the soundtrack of my life, all these songs that have meant something to me from the age of like 4 until now. Yeah. And the Soul Doctors have about 4 songs on my soundtrack. And I just think they're a wonderful band.
We do change though, because when you're young, there's a snobbery around music, isn't
there? Big time. And you're part of a tribe. At least this was what it was like when myself and yourself were young. People were in tribes. And I don't think it's the same, or at least I don't think it's as pronounced nowadays. But when I was growing up, like, there was the Mods, and there was the Rockers, and there was the Indie Kids,
the Goths, and all this stuff.
And I was very much an indie kid.
Right.
Whereas the Saw Doctors were very much populist. And like my band, like 5 people would be at the concert and they'd all be staring at their shoes slowly shifting around on the floor, whereas in that Soul Doctors gigs you'd have 1,000 people having the crack,
the time of their lives.
I remember seeing them at the Trip to Tip, like, God, in 91 maybe 1990, and they were, I'll never forget when they were playing a song called I think it's called Hay Rap, and all these bales of hay started flying around the crowd, and I was kind of looking at them going, they're just having so much more fun than any band I know.
This is the crack, yeah. PriceWatch@rte.ie. Now, there's strikes in Germany.
There are.
And one of our listeners is stuck in Munich. I'm stuck in Munich until Wednesday. Aer Lingus cancelled our flight as there are strikes on in German airports. They told us on Saturday and we were due to fly back yesterday. Are we entitled to compensation?
Well, the short answer to that question is no.
Right, of course.
But there's a longer and probably more important answer, because I think sometimes when people are in this scenario, they get the terminology confused, right? Because when I say this person is entitled to compensation, it doesn't mean this person is entitled to nothing. Because there are very strict rules in play when it comes to flight cancellations across the European Union. Mm. And they're all governed by a thing that we've talked about on the show before, which is Flight Directive EU 261. And under EU 261, you're entitled, depending on what's going on. That's my phone.
It is. It's not mine.
Do you know what's actually just happened there? I sat on my keys, which have a thing that causes my phone to ring. So it's not like my phone is on silent, but the phone was ringing.
All right.
Oh, God.
Niamh says, if it's a scam call, could you put them up on air?
I'll just put my keys over there because I keep doing it. Anyway, where was I? So under EU Directive 261, if a flight is cancelled and you're coming into Ireland, an airline has responsibilities to you. Now, nowadays, airlines aren't necessarily always going to be upfront and tell you exactly what they have to do. But it hasn't changed very much since times past. Because in times past, when a flight was cancelled, what would happen is the airline would bus you to a hotel, put you up in a hotel until they could get you home. Nowadays, what tends to happen is the airline will say, your flight is cancelled. And that's kind of it. Now, they have an obligation to tell you what your rights are. Now, in a scenario like this, the person isn't entitled to compensation because the reason for the cancellation is beyond the airline's control. So in the same way that if the flight was cancelled because of a volcanic ash cloud, or if it was cancelled because of storms, or if it's cancelled because of industrial action, the airline can do nothing about that. So it's not obliged to pay you compensation. But it is obliged to do one of three things. It has to offer you a refund, full refund of your flight. It has to offer you a rerouting at the next available opportunity. And then if it does offer the rerouting at the next available opportunity, it has a duty of care to you until it can get you home.
So that means accommodation.
So it doesn't just mean accommodation. It means they have to take care of your hotel expenses, and they have to cover all your meals. They have to cover your taxis to and from the airport, and they have to cover two phone calls or indeed two faxes.
Do you have to pay for all of these and then claim back?
Here's the thing. Some airlines in some circumstances will have hotels lined up, and when a flight is cancelled, they'll put you in the hotel. But a lot of the time nowadays, what the airlines do is it's almost like you're left to your own devices. Or indeed, if they cancel the flight before you get to the airport, well, then you're not going to go to the airport just to be bussed to an airport hotel. So in this scenario, and I contacted this listener straight away. So what they need to do is they need to keep a record of all of the money they spend from the moment they were due to fly home until the moment they actually fly home. And then they need to send all of those receipts to Aer Lingus, and Aer Lingus will be obliged to pick up the tab. Now, there is limitations on it because it's reasonable expenses. Okay. So it's not like you could eat in a 2-star Michelin restaurant and run up a bill of €500 and then send that to Aer Lingus, because no airline would be obligated to cover that cost. Similarly, if you were to stay in a 5-star hotel, no airline would be obliged to cover that cost. But they don't, like the EU directive doesn't say what the reasonable expenses are, but it's a common sense thing.
And they're at the airline's discretion then, are they?
Well, not really. No. I mean, like there isn't a kind of a ceiling on, the hotel must cost €120.
For example, this person is staying in a hotel and they continue to stay in that hotel and it happens to be a 5-star hotel.
You could probably argue the toss
on that one, yes.
But you know, having said that, the airline might say, well, hang on a second, that's above and beyond what we're prepared to pay. But the important thing is that you keep the receipted expenses, because without the receipts, nothing that you do will be entertained. And then you send them to the airline. And the same process works for every single scenario. It doesn't matter if it's Aer Lingus or Ryanair or British Airways or Lufthansa or whoever it is. If you send them to the airline, and then they have a period of time in which they can reimburse you. And if they don't reimburse you, then you can contact the Commission for Aviation Regulation, and then they can intervene on your behalf.
And what if this person has to be back in the country before Wednesday?
Well, this is the thing. They're not entitled. Let's say if they lose a day's work,
yes,
or 2 days' work or whatever it might be, they're not entitled to compensation. But one of the things that this person could consider is they if they could get another flight with another airline and fly home, precedent would suest that Aer Lingus or whoever it might be would have to pick up the tab for that other flight. Now, I was checking whether, because I thought, okay, well, as you noted there, Germany, there's a lot of industrial unrest in Germany over the cost of living crisis, because the transport workers across Germany, trains, planes, all of the rest, are on strike for 24 hours because inflation in Germany is as bad as it is here, and they want their wages to increase to match inflation. So in that sense, I thought, OK, this might have impacted all airports. But I contacted Ryanair and I contacted Aer Lingus, and Aer Lingus told me that the only flight impacted today is the flight from Munich.
Right.
So it's just unfortunate. And similarly, Ryanair didn't, there's no, I looked at the Dublin airport arrivals and there's no other flights coming in from Germany that have been cancelled. So it's not a widespread issue as yet. So the person could probably make their way from Munich to Berlin or wherever it might be, get another flight home, and then similarly keep their seats and send those
and
to.
So they get reimbursed and they'll get their flights paid for. Well, I mean, they're
If they booked an alternate flight,
yes.
Well, then they would get that covered, but that would be it.
Okay.
You know, so it's not like they would get their hotel accommodation or whatever it might be. But the bottom line is that they are not entitled to compensation. And it's really important in all your dealings with an airline, doesn't matter what airline it is, that in scenarios like this, you don't say, I'm entitled to compensation. Because what happens then is the staff reading the mail or the correspondence that you send will look at the word compensation and say, compensation doesn't apply.
Yes.
And they'll put a strike through it. And then you just have to, the process just gets very slow.
Okay. You have about 20 seconds. What's your top shrinkflation thing that you got during the week? Is there?
I got lots of them. Shampoo. I think one of the top brands of shampoo, I think Pantene, it's fallen from 450 to 400 millilitres and the bottle looks like it's the same size. But again,
same price.
That's what people are saying.
A great article on shrinkflation by Conor Pope in the Irish Times today. You can read it online. Conor, thanks so much. Pricewatch at rte.ie if you want Conor to grapple with any of your consumer issues. That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.